Welcome to Ask Ally, the self-publishing advice podcast from the Alliance of Independent Authors. This week, it's another Indie Author Fringe highlight, showcasing a presentation from our free online conference for self-publishing authors.
My particular presentation covers failing faster to succeed as an author, and in it I'm going to talk about the different things you should consider throughout the different stages of your writing and publishing in order to ensure that by the time you have a book that's ready to be launched, you know whether or not you have an interested in buying audience. There is no magic bullet when it comes to marketing your book, but there are a lot of steps that you can take in advance to know whether or not your book stands a likelihood of success. And in taking those steps at the same time, you're also creating an engaged audience who has a sense of co-creating the book with you, and therefore they have a lot more at stake in supporting you when it comes time for the launch. So we're going to cover some of the different ways that you can do that. But before we get started, let's talk about what success actually means, because for every author that I speak to, there's a different context for them. So for some of them, they want to have more engaged readers. Some of them want to have more book sales. They want to have that coveted bestseller status on Amazon or on the Wall Street Journal. But there are other types of success that can come as well. So some of the authors we work with are nonfiction authors, and they're looking for things like more speaking opportunities or joint venture partnerships, or they're looking for more engaged clients and new prospects for their business. So when you start thinking about failing faster to succeed as an author, you have to start thinking first about what is your definition of success, because once you know what that is, it helps you to outline and identify the steps necessary in order to reach that point more quickly. Sometimes when I talk with people about failing faster, they really balk at that statement because nobody wants to fail, right? But in the Writer's Critique group that I lead, one of the things we talk about is the fact that getting rejections is good, because when you get rejected, it means that you're out there and making an attempt and you're trying to do things. And so when it comes to failing faster, it is a good thing as well, because there you're making an attempt, but you're also being wise to the feedback and the input that you're getting to discern before you invest a ton of time, effort, and money whether or not the title or the concept that you have for a book is going to be one that's going to be financially feasible or worth your while. And whether you like it or not, there are opportunities to fail throughout the entire writing process. So it can start as early as your initial idea, where you can be starting to do some initial competitive research and figuring out whether the idea even makes sense to write about, or if there's too much competition or not enough interest in terms of people wanting to buy that particular title. Or you can fail during the writing process itself by participating in a writer's critique group that will give you feedback as to what you're writing and whether or not it resonates with them. You can also fail after you've written the book, but before you've launched it, by finding beta readers who can give you feedback and once again give you an idea as to whether or not this is a title that's worthwhile pursuing further. The sooner in the process that you identify that failure point or the success point, the better off you'll be. Because if you do it early in the process, then you save wasting a lot of time on something that isn't going to go anywhere. And if you use it as a learning point, you can actually take the idea that you had originally started pursuing and modify it in a way with the feedback that you're getting that allows you to actually create something that your reading audience wants. There are three primary strategies you can use when you're trying to fail faster. The first has to do with research. The second has to do with securing feedback, and that can be from groups of individuals like critique groups, or it can be from surveys. And finally, it's about testing. It's about finding the right audience, and that can be testing through split testing of different concepts, or it can be done through actually targeting your ad campaigns towards different reader groups so that you can identify the right ideal reader group to launch the book for. But eventually, what it all comes down to really is about the research that you do and the connections that you make with the ideal reader that you want to be having enjoy and appreciate your work. So let's start first with really looking at the competitive research and figuring out what topic ideas make the most sense to write about. So I have a couple of different tools that I like to use when I'm going to start doing research, and one of them is a Chrome add-in called Kindle Spy. And what Kindle Spy allows me to do is to look at the books that are selling within the Kindle store that are targeted around certain keywords that I think I want to write about. So for instance, right now we have a customer who is thinking about writing a book on omni-channel marketing. And essentially what that is about the prevalence of stores and retailers needing to be present in multiple different channels instead of just one nowadays. So for instance, Amazon buying Whole Foods is an example where they're going to start having, you know, more brick and mortar retail stores, and same with the bookstores that they've recently opened in some of the major cities here in the U.S. So they're not just going to be online retailers anymore, but they're looking to have other distribution points that allow them to market and distribute their products into multiple different channels. So if we wanted to see whether omnichannel marketing was a good topic for this particular client to own because he wants to build his business and brand around it, some of the things that we're going to be interested in are seeing, for instance, that there's low competition, but that there is some interest in the topic. And so there's two different tools that I use to assess that. The first was the Kindle Spy, as I mentioned. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to go in and I'm first going to just look in Amazon to see whether or not it's even a keyword that comes up. Because what this tells me is that there are people searching for it at least. And sure enough, it shows up. I've got omni-channel. And when I click on that, it will open the books that are available in the Kindle store that are related to that particular keyword. Now, on first glance, as I look through these, none of them appear to be exceedingly popular. I'm not seeing a lot of great ratings on them. I'm not really impressed with many of the covers either. Interesting to note is that some appear to be in a completely foreign language, even though they're in the U.S. bookstore. And I've got things here in German. I have things in English. It looks like Japanese as well. So it's interesting to see that, yes, there are books on this subject, but now if I use Kindle Spy, what it's going to do is show me all of the books that currently are on this page, and it gives me a bunch of information about them. It tells me the average sales rank within Amazon, which is not very impressive. Typically, for something that I'm going to be interested in pursuing, I want a sales rank of 30,000 or less. For some of the, at least half of the books in this section. I also would like to see a more robust monthly income. I see the average monthly income for those that earned anything is about $3. And across all of these 16 titles that are shown, a total monthly revenue of only $48. So that's not very impressive. But when I consider this fact that if I rank on this, if I sort this by rank, I'm going to see that a number of these have no rank whatsoever, and each of these, except for one, is in German. So what that is telling me is that a German author probably has a book on the German Amazon that may be doing very well and may have been released here in the U.S. as well, but because it's in a foreign language, it doesn't have as robust a market. So this doesn't quite give me the information that I was hoping for because of this mix. So the next thing that I would do then is I would go and look a little further, dig a little deeper. I'm going to use actually Dave Chesson's tool called KDP Rocket. And if you get a chance to listen to him later on, he is an absolute resource when it comes to everything Kindle. I've been taking his Amazon Ads course recently and really enjoying that. I highly recommend it. But give me just a second and we'll toggle over to KDP Rocket. All right, and so here we are now with KDP Rocket, and I'm in the Idea Searches tab. So I'm just going to start here first by doing a new idea search, and I'm going to go ahead and type in omnichannel and see what I get here. And so go get 'em, Rocket. And okay, so what this shows me is some of the different keywords that are used when searching for it, and it gives me an idea of the number of competitors that I would find in Amazon in order to compete for this term if I wanted. The average monthly earnings, obviously, we saw earlier wasn't very good. I'm actually going to click on Analyze this to give more detail. So I only see an average here of $7 in monthly earnings. But the interesting thing to note is the large number of Google searches per month and the estimated number of searches in Amazon per month. Now, the reason that's of interest to me is because with so many different searches taking place in Google, it tells me that this is becoming an up-and-coming trending topic. This is something that people are going to be looking for more information on. And obviously, Google searches and Amazon searches are not one on the same, But I can get a good feel that if people are looking for something in Amazon, in Google, most likely they're going to come and start looking for more information about it in Amazon in the near future. And we can see that, you know, the estimated number of searches here per month is fairly respectable. I mean, 378. This competitive scoring that KBP Rocket gives basically says that the higher the number, the harder it is to rank. So this is a term, omnichannel is a term that our client is interested in trying to own. And if he wrote a book about this that did fairly well, that ranked well, that did well against his competition, then in Amazon, most likely he wouldn't have any issue with reaching that number one rank for that term. Now, given the fact that there's such a low monthly revenue from it, an average monthly earnings of $7, if his goal were to be selling a lot of copies, then that may not be the best option for him. We might market that same book using different terms. As a matter of fact, most likely we will. But when it comes to being able to own that term, it's something that we definitely want to make sure is one of the keywords that we target so that as we're promoting the book, he will be seen as the authority and expert around that topic. Now, the nice thing that KDP Rocket allows me to do as well is I can go and see and dig more deeply into what competition there is around certain things so that I can get a list of the books that are doing well in that particular topic area so that I can learn more about them, dig deeper into, say, the table of contents and what's being covered, perhaps develop my own opinion as to what's being left out to make sure that when we develop our draft outline for the book, we're covering those things, not just the basics that's being hit by everybody, but the things that are unique from my client's viewpoint and my client's standpoint in terms of his expertise within the industry. And so now as I look at this competitive search and I see what other titles are out there, I can see, for instance, that some of them are quite old, a couple of years old at this point in time, and none of them have a very high Amazon ranking, sales rank. So it would be fairly easy for us to compete against these, especially because there's very few reviews, there's very few sales taking place. So being able to, you know, focus on competing against these titles, this particular author would do very well. So if I look now at idea searches, maybe there are other terms that are related to omnichannel that we haven't thought about yet that we may want to target as part of this. I can go into KDP Rocket. I can put in the idea search for omnichannel, and it will show me different variations on that, as well as books that are related to this topic. So for instance, competing in the age of omnichannel retailing. Now, interestingly enough, we've been using omnichannel as a hyphenated word. Most of these are coming up as not being hyphenated. So that would be something that we would want to note in our evaluation. Perhaps if I go back to idea searches and I put in a second idea search and do it without the hyphen, maybe that's going to help me drill down further to get the information that we need to find out where our real competition lies. So here, we're seeing that there's more competitors around this idea. And there's certainly more Google searches as well. But the estimated number of searches on Amazon isn't quite as much. So maybe we, you know, decide that we want to own one variation on the term, say the hyphenated variation. But when we do our keywording, we do both. We use both. So that's all part of developing our strategy on how we're going to market it and doing our research. So part of what we want to be doing here as well is in this AMS idea searches, we want to be making note of the different titles that exist that we think are things that may be of interest to us in terms of our competition. So Omnichannel Marketing by Shady Ramadan. Let's see if we can find that in here. And I'm actually going to try it since it's done without a hyphen. I'm going to go ahead and give that a try. And here we go. So when I look, Omnichannel Marketing is right here. And when I use KDP Spy or Kindle Spy to look at this and see what results we get here, it's going to show me that there's a bit more competition because this time we had 20 results instead of the 16 that we had previously. Our sales ranks are still not very competitive, not really what we would like to see, but better than previously. You'll see that there's not a lot of competition according to KDP Spy, meaning that we'll be able to compete here well, but the popularity and the potential isn't there automatically. So what we would need to do is actually generate that. And part of the way we can do that is through the activities that we take in terms of engaging our readership early in the process. And so that's where surveys and feedback and things like that come into play. We'll see a slightly higher monthly revenue here. Once again, not ideal. It's not a wild market to get into, but it's helping us formulate what we want to do next. And because this particular author is looking to own a category, actually, this is very good news for us because he'll be able to own this very easily. So the next step in the process for us, because our clients decided that, yes, this is what he wants to pursue, is to kind of start looking at some of these best-selling topics that are in this category and just getting a sense for how to flesh out the outline we already have for our book. And so one of the ways that we can do that is I pay attention to two things. We pay attention to the reviews of the book, and we pay attention to the table of contents. So in looking at these reviews, the nice thing here is I see a very large disparity among the reviews. So good, but very general info. Okay, so this particular book is only for beginners, and the writer repeats a lot of the same idea, but in general was a fluid lecture. So what that tells me is one thing we need to note is that this particular reader at least wanted something more in depth. And so the deeper that we can go into what omnichannel marketing is and how to leverage it perhaps to grow a business, the more appealing it would be to at least this particular reviewer. And so when we look here, we just have great for marketing lovers. All right. So that really doesn't give us too much information to go on. It could very well even be somebody that knows the author. But now if I use the look inside feature, what this is going to help me do is just get a feel for what topics were covered. I mean, if the one reviewer felt that it was very basic information, we want to know what that individual at least considered to be basic information. So let's look at the table of contents. It's going to cover things like a change in consumer behavior, why omnichannel marketing, the evolution of it, marketing case studies, stepping in omnichannel, transformation strategy, start implementing omnichannel marketing, and more case studies. So if we're working on our outline for the book, these definitely do sound like fairly basic things. It's a good outline for a book. But one of the things we would want to make sure that we're doing is how do we infuse our own flavor into the book so that for my client, when he's building his business with this, that there are things that point specifically to the innovation and uniqueness with which he pursues omnichannel marketing for his clients and his customers. And so we have to come up with what are some of the ideas. You know, one of the things that I see missing in here is kind of the whole development of a middle phase when it comes to omnichannel marketing. There's a whole niche of businesses that are growing because they are filling the gap between what a traditional retailer can do and what they want to do as part of omnichannel marketing. So maybe there's a whole section in here on, you know, bridging the gap between your traditional retail marketing and distribution channels and the future forward ones. One of the things I want to emphasize here is that while we are looking at the table of contents and the reviews of books that are selling well, we're doing this to get a feel for what readers are appreciating and what they want and what they're looking for in these books. We never really dig any deeper into the book than this because one of the things that we don't want to run into is we don't want to run into issues of plagiarism. We're not looking to copy somebody else's work. We're just looking to fill in the gaps that may exist in our own outline for the book that we're planning on writing. And so this is just more to jog ideas and thoughts and understand consumer needs and behaviors more than anything else. Among the other information that we note when we're using Kindle Spy is we look for things like commonalities among the covers. We look for what categories are being used and keywords within the descriptions. We also check out things like the trim size that's being used. We make note of these things at this point in time so that ultimately when we produce the book, we want to have a book that both stands out and fits in within the category. So ideally, we want it to look like it belongs with all of the books it's on a shelf with, but we want it to have some eye-popping characteristic that also makes it stand out so that readers are more likely to pull it off the shelf and take a peek at it. So with all this information, then it is time to start writing. So we fill out our outline, we start writing our chapters. We do all of the things that we need to create the book. Now, one of the things that I personally like to do is I participate in a writer's critique group. So with that particular group, each time we meet, I can bring 1,500 words of a book that's in progress and run it through a group of people who will give me their honest feedback. One of the things I like about this particular process is they use something called the sandwich method, where they all start out with something nice, and then they rip it to pieces, and then they finish off with something nice. So I don't walk out feeling too awfully bad. But, you know, it is always good to get other people's feedback, especially other authors. It's not that they necessarily have to know the topic that you're reading or that you're writing about, but simply that they get a feel for, they give you a feel for whether or not they understand what you were writing about and whether it's clear and concise enough. So reader feedback is always important. Later on, once you have more of the book written and you feel more secure in it being closer to its final format, that's when you're going to start seeking beta readers. And oftentimes, you know, people will skip this particular step in the process, but beta readers can do wonderful things for you. So I typically won't send a book out to a beta reader until after the book's already been edited, but I can tell you that no matter how many times you edit, whether you self-edit or hire editors, whether you've done 3 edits or 17, whether you've done it online or you've gotten a printed proof and you've edited it, there is always something more to be found. So beta readers are somebody that I typically reach out to after I've been through all of the editing that I'm going to do. And when I think the book is fairly close to its final format, perhaps I'm working on things like putting together some of the design in it or adding more testimonials or things like that. But I think the content's fairly secure. I'll ask beta readers to start reading it and provide feedback. And oftentimes they'll come back with a typo or a misspelling. We certainly do our best to catch everything before we send it out to anybody. But I do recommend as often as possible sending your book out to at least 20, if not 40 beta readers, just so that you get that amount of feedback, so that when you do put something out there, it is your best work. Now, I know a lot of people will say, you know, failing faster to succeed as an author, you really should just get something out there and, you know, let the chips fall as they may. But for us, the authors we're working with more often than not are using their book to grow a business. And so the impression that readers have is a first impression that needs to be a good one. So we always do our best to make sure that that first impression is one that is a solid, positive, lasting impression of the author and his work. Now, here's where some of the fun could come in too, because sometimes when an author starts working on a book, they have a certain title that just resonates with them, and this is what it should be called. And so the entire time they're going through that writing process, they're assuming that this is going to be the name of the book when it's published. But sometimes it's not exactly what the reader is going to be anticipating or looking for. So for instance, we had one particular author come to us with a work in progress that he wanted us to publish. And the working title for it was called My Broken Coconut. Now, for anybody who knew the author, this was just kind of one of the ways that he spoke, and it was his sense of humor, and it made sense. And the book was really about a migraine that he had had that lasted for 2.5 years, and about his journey to healing. And My Broken Coconut certainly made a lot of sense to him, and for anybody who knew him, it was fine. But from a marketing standpoint, and from an SEO standpoint, and from choosing a category, it was something that would have been very confusing to a reader who didn't know him. So we had to encourage him to kind of look beyond the readers who were part of his network and consider the readers who had no clue who he was. And so what we did is we created a SurveyMonkey survey, and we brainstormed a few different ideas for both a title and a subtitle, and mixed and matched how those subtitles and titles could go together. Part of it was done purely from SEO standpoint, where we felt a specific title would be great for keywords for triggering Amazon's algorithms. And some of it was intended to really maintain his sense of humor. And ultimately, we sent that out to readers, and they were readers that we had to find because he was a first-time author. He was growing a business that was in a totally different arena than what he had been in previously. So he didn't have an email list so much to send it out to. He had some friends and family to share it with, and he did share it with them. But once we started talking to people who, you know, we gave them a description of what the book was about, as well as these different title and subtitle options, it became clear that had we gone with My Broken Coconut, nobody would have purchased the book. It was only when we started getting into some of the survey results that we were able to come up with a title that was catchy. It was called What Doesn't Kill You, and the headache, that the subtitle was The Headache from Hell and My Relentless Search for Healing. And so we hit keywords in there at the same time as we did something a little bit psychological in the title. If you think about it, you know, if somebody says, what doesn't kill you, it's very common for us to fill in that blank. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? Well, that was the whole point of the motivational message that this author wanted to be giving as he built his speaking career, was about how these difficulties in our lives, if they don't kill you, they make you stronger. And how do you find the wherewithal within you to keep pushing through these trying times? So we ended up choosing something for a title that encapsulated not just what the book was about, but what his overall message and brand was about as well. And we could only do that by sharing the contents and asking for his prospective audience, who he hadn't even met yet, to help him come up with that title. And so in doing that, the nice thing was that the readers felt this co-ownership, this co-creation process. And so we're much more likely and engaged in the process when it came to us sending out suggestions for feedback on covers. And so we had some different cover comps put together and sent those out and asked those same set of people for their thoughts as to which one to go with. And ultimately, they became buyers of the book as well. So remember earlier I talked about making note of the different covers in the category that you were going to be in. So this represents a project we were doing with another client of ours who was writing a book called A Guide for Recruiting Your Next CEO. And while we were working on what particular cover design made sense for him, one of the things we did was we pulled together just this contact sheet of covers that would show what it would look like if his book was positioned on Amazon with all of the others. And so we wanted to make sure that we had some of the similar characteristics in terms of, you know, these banners and text-oriented and a little bit of blockiness to it. You'll see most of them at some point in time have a block someplace. And so those were some of the things that we were looking for in terms of making this book stand out. And so we came up with a title and then with a cover design, or basic cover comp, it's called. And then we wanted to fool around with some of the colors for it. So we came up with another color comp based on what the author was looking for. And so we pulled in some of the more commonly used colors and styles that were in some of the books here in this contact sheet. So oftentimes what we're doing is we're using the other covers as kind of what are the common characteristics. And once we define those, we create our own cover. And then we look to see how that cover is going to fit in with the others. Ultimately, we went with a slightly different variation on this particular cover design. And, you know, the book is launching here in October. And, you know, we feel that it's going to do very well in positioning and against the other titles that it's positioned against, but also in standing out against them. Now, sometimes what we do is if we have multiple different cover comp designs and we really haven't been able to settle on which one we think is going to be best, we may use this as yet another opportunity to survey our potential readers. We've done this with a couple of different books in the past, and there's a great tool, a website called Help Me Choose a Cover. And so if you go to helpmechooseacover.com, the thing that I like about this is that it allows you to share within social media a variety of different cover comps, but instead of somebody, say, commenting on your Facebook post saying they like A, B, C, or D, and you know, then you having to sort through all of them manually to figure out which one makes sense, what you can do is you can come to Help Me Choose a Cover. You can upload the different cover designs that are potential for your particular work. And then you can use this in order to say, okay, which one do people like? So for instance, here we've got another German title on success. And if somebody were to go here, now they can kind of just give very quickly a vote by clicking on their option for the cover design they like the most. So once this finishes loading, I can go here and I can see, all right, do I like A, B, C, or D? And so personally, I like B the most, or A the most, sorry. And so I would click on that. And once I've done that, I can vote. And if I'm curious, I can also, when I vote, it will show me all the results. And thankfully, I get to see that, you know, I'm in the majority, which is always nice. I didn't test this out ahead of time. But, you know, it's nice to know that my taste is similar to others who are looking at this title. Now, what this does is it helps the author have just a very clear-cut, quick impression of which title, which cover design does the most. One of the things it doesn't do that I'm hoping that it will do in the future is actually allow you to provide feedback as to why you like this particular option the most. Right now, it's simply choose, you know, multiple choice, choose which one you think is best. But either way, even just as this currently is, it helps you get a feedback from people who would potentially be buying this book as to, you know, which cover design makes the most sense. So rather than uploading the files to Facebook or to LinkedIn or to Twitter, what I can do is create my poll here on helpmechooseacover.com, and then I can share that link to the poll out in my other various social media and ask that they come here and vote. So another great resource that the Arthur Marketing Club also puts together in addition to Help Me Choose a Cover is they have this thing called Bookalyzer. And so you can go to authormarketingclub.com/bookalyzer, and you can go here and you can put in the ASIN number of your book. And what it will do is actually show you some very interesting information that helps you get a feel for how the cover design appears at multiple different sizes. Because one of the things that most cover designers miss or forget to think about is that this particular book is going to be not just the size of a paperback. So say my trim size on this is 5x8, but it's also going to be, you know, small as well. And so it's going to come down to a thumbnail size. So one of the things you want to see is when you're looking at your cover graphics, you know, this is what it will look like in the search results page. This is what it's going to look like here. But when you get down to frequently bought section, you know, it's going to get smaller and smaller. So does the cover still stand out? Can the reader still tell what it's about? You know, and once it gets, we've had some covers that once it got to this size even, it was very difficult to tell who the author was, what the book was about, what the title was, what the keywords were. And so you want to make sure that you're doing all of this testing in advance before you release the book so that you know that ultimately the cover that you're putting out there isn't going to look like a blob on the different sites when it's coming up in search terms. Because if it looks like a blob and people can't tell what it is, they're not going to click on it. And so you're losing a buying opportunity there. So I do recommend checking out your title and seeing what it looks like here. Obviously, this particular book, because it's not released yet, it's missing a lot of the other information that Bookalyzer would typically provide. But I find that even just being able to do this analysis of the cover graphics is a huge benefit before the release. So once I feel fairly confident about the cover and about the title and the subtitle, I use the research that I had from earlier using both KDP Rocket and Kindle Spy to start focusing on the keywords that are going to become part of the back cover copy blurb, as well as the book listing description. Now, one of the mistakes that most independent authors make that I see is that they think that the blurb that you use on the back cover is sufficient to use for your book listing. But the problem is that when you're printing a book, you're lucky if you have 250 to 300 words that you can use on the back cover of a normal size paperback. But when it comes to the book listing that you have on Amazon, you have significantly more real estate in which to describe the contents of the book and engage your potential reader. So, you know, there's formatting that can be used. There's more text that can be used. You can highlight the keywords that you're targeting more frequently. You can include reviewer comments. So there's all sorts of things that you can do that people miss out on doing when they only copy the back cover blurb to the book listing description. So to me, when I draft both of them, they are two separate and unique things that serve two distinct purposes. And yes, I want to use the same keywords in both of them, but I want to use them differently because the one that is the book listing is actually going to be engaged with and interacted with by the search algorithms. So that one really needs to make sure that the keywords are findable by the search engines. However, the back cover copy has to focus more on engaging the reader than it does on search algorithms. So there I may make it something that is much more of a gotcha type thing. I'll make sure that I capture the reader's interest quickly and easily. And yes, I want to do the same thing in the book listing description, but I want to do that from a standpoint of making sure that I have liberally peppered in the keywords that I'm targeting without becoming obnoxious with it. So, you know, that's always the balance to maintain there, is making sure that your keywords are in the listing without being too overbearing. So then at this point in time, I have perfected my book listing, my back cover, my cover, and the keywords that I'm using. I've engaged some readers by asking them to give me feedback. And part of what I can also do at this point, and often have, is I'll do some testing of different advertising that's very targeted towards specific reader groups. And so I want to have an idea for, you know, I think I know who my ideal reader is, but sometimes it can be slightly different than who I thought it was. So I use Connect Explore in order to develop some highly targeted Facebook advertising campaigns, each of which that would be geared towards a specific target demographic. And so what I do here is oftentimes they are layered so that they will have multiple interest groups, and they have to be a member of more than one of each of those groups in order to be included in the targeting for this ad. And the reason I'm doing that is I want to get really specific that if somebody's responding to this ad, they're responding because they don't just have a passing interest in what I'm using as my keywords for this ad campaign, but that they have a very in-depth, detailed interest in it. And so, for instance, when we're talking about nonprofits, what I would do is I would come in here and I would look for nonprofit executives, maybe groups related to that. So I'm going to put that in as a search term, and maybe leadership and management. So if I put these, So I'm searching for these different things. And can I put in another one? And management. And so if I do that and go ahead and do my search within Connect.io, it's going to come back and it's going to show me a bunch of different groups that are related to this. Now, what a Connect.io allows me to do is actually take all of the different search results that I select and put them together into targeted groups. And so what I can do here is I can choose all of the ones that I'm interested in, and let's see, I'm just going to choose some random ones here. And say I have these six different ones, and if I wanted to run an ad campaign against this particular set of groups, what I can also do is I can come down and say choose some other groups that are similar to this, so show the selected, and go ahead and show suggestions. And so it's going to come up with another set of groups, 45 more suggestions on top of the ones I originally had, and so I can keep adding to the group of things that I have so far. Okay, now I've decided that I have enough. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to save this ad set. So I'm going to select them all, and I'm going to save it to a specific project. I'm going to actually give it a new name in just a minute. I'm going to apply it all to an ad set. And so once I have this in place, what I can do is take the results and say I'm going to run this against a specific ad campaign. And it's going to ask me for an ad set. And I have to select a location, so I'm here in the United States. And I can either copy those interests manually, or what I can do is I can say I'm going to divide these among multiple layers. So actually I'm going to click this twice in order to create two additional layers, and currently you'll see those are empty. But then I can do divide, and I can set this so that it is dividing randomly across those groups. So now the different selections that I've taken are divided among these different ad groups. And what I can do when I apply this to my ad campaign, what Facebook is going to say is when it looks at people to potentially show my ad to, they must like one of these, and one of these. And so in doing so, what that means is they haven't just expressed a passing interest by being interested in one of these particular pages, but they have a very strong or enthusiastic interest in that topic because they are members of each of these pages, have followed each of these pages. So it allows me to become very hyper-targeted with my advertising for Facebook. And what I want to do is I want to make sure that each ad campaign that I run is hyper-targeted to one specific ideal reader group. So I'm going to have an avatar that says specifically, this is somebody who is, say, self-employed, who is an entrepreneur that's been in business for 5 to 7 years. They have at least a six-figure business. And so in all of these different things, they have an expressed interest in A, B, and C. And so I'm going to target my messaging specifically to them. And in doing so, and then running a second ad campaign targeted to a completely different individual, it'll allow me to start seeing through the click-through rates who is actually expressing interest in the book that I have to offer. And so in doing that, then, if I want to go and take that information, I can create very targeted ad campaigns within AMS, within Amazon itself. And I do that using Dave Chesson's AMS marketing course that he teaches you how to use KDP Rocket for. But when you do that, you can create a list of, 400 different keywords that you want to target that are all hyper-specific to the target audience that you want to reach, so that you are actually testing who your reader is and their responsiveness to the title as you're marketing it, so that you can minimize and reduce the ad spend that you're doing. Currently on a campaign that we're working on, we're spending about 5 cents a click in marketing the book to sell a 99-cent ebook. So if I'm spending 5 cents to, sell a 99-cent ebook, Amazon's giving me 35 cents of that, so I'm seeing 24 cents on each copy. It's not fantastic, but it's not bad either. So being able to know who my ideal reader is before I spend a lot of money marketing to them allows me to reduce my cost per click significantly. So the tools that I shared in this presentation are just some of the different ways that you can use in order to fail faster to succeed as an author. But really what it comes down to is you want to find those ways that are going to enable you to shortcut the process, to either come to a decision that, yes, you have an eager and buying audience for this topic, or you don't. And that can be from everything from polling your mailing list to, as I said, doing competitive research, to finding beta readers, to having a critique group. And obviously then testing out any theory that you have through surveys and getting feedback, as well as doing split testing through advertising. So these are all just different options you can use, and I'm sure there are others that you can come up with that will be suitable for you as well. But these are things that we found work for both fiction authors as well as nonfiction authors. And so hopefully you've gotten some idea of something that you can apply to your own research so that you can fail faster to succeed in your career as an author. And we look forward to keeping in touch with you. Feel free to reach out to us at emeraldlakebooks.com if you have any questions, or to follow up with me personally. You can contact me at tara@emeraldlakebooks.com, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can. From here, I just wish you the best of the rest of the day for this presentation. There's a ton of great authors coming next, so stay tuned for Indie Author Fringe and enjoy the rest of the conference.
You've been listening to an Indie Author Fringe highlight presentation for the Ask Ally Self-Publishing Advice Broadcast, brought to you by the Alliance of Independent Authors. As well as bringing you highlights from the Fringe Conference, our weekly show features a beginners and advanced self-publishing salon and a member Q&A, where Ally members have their most pressing questions answered. All our broadcasts are designed to keep you up to date with the fast-changing choices and challenges of self-publishing. Find more author advice, tips, and tools at our Self-Publishing Advice Center, selfpublishingadvice.org. And if you haven't already, we invite you to join our organization and become a self-publishing ally. You can do that at AllianceIndependentAuthors.org. Now, go write and publish.